You made it. You're here. And I invite you just to stay with your breath, maybe three breaths more, just to let the outside world go. Breathing in, I'm alive. Breathing out, I'm home. Breathing in, I'm alive. Breathing out, I'm home. Nowhere to go. Nothing to do. You can be here now. Again, I give deep and tremendous gratitude for your being here and for whatever got you here. For some, it may have been, oh, Joanna Macy, oh, Donald Rothberg, oh, Lawrence Ellis, oh, two or three of them, oh, Spirit Rock. It may have been, yahoo, I just can't wait to get there. For others, it may have been, the suffering is so great. Maybe, just maybe, in that place, at that retreat, I can get some relief. I can see a way through. For some, it may have been something in between. For many, it may have been a combination of all of those. And part of the secret of transforming the distress is often just giving gratitude, even for that, whatever brought us here. There is a secret, even in that pain, that anxiety, that distress, that can unleash and unlock the powers of transformation. Because we have the capacity individually and also greatly collectively to meet those challenges, those distresses. And so in one sense I ask, what kind of fools are we? So I read the title of this retreat, or at least the first description. There's a secret to healing ourselves in our world. It involves our capacity to enter into our pain, confusion, and woundedness. So how many of you said to your family members, your friends, your colleagues, I'm going to enter into my pain, confusion, and woundedness for several days? Yippee! The door is closed. But realistically, think about it. How crazy a society that we don't have ritual spaces where we don't on a regular basis shout with joy to others that we can enter into a transformational space where we can meet our confusion, our pain, our woundedness to make ourselves and each other and the planet whole. Where we pretend that we can go about 50-hour days rushing here, rushing there, with these watches on our wrists, with all the obligations, often with isolation and little connection, and not scream and yearn for places where we can acknowledge that. Stop. Breathe. Move into it and not turn our gaze. And meet it with courage and compassion and loving kindness. So that's the invitation. Yippee! To do that for ourselves and for each other in this 7-day period. And not to stop a week from today, but to practice. Perfect practice makes perfect. And we will continue to have our foibles and our mistakes and our trip-ups, but we come back to the practice. We come back to community. We come back to the world and the world community come back to us. So that is part of the invitation. I had a fairly distressing week. I won't go into all the details, but I'm sure that some of you have had the experience of preparing to go on retreat and all these hindrances putting in appearance. Body breaks down here, the printer breaks down there just when you have to get something out, the kids start doing this or that. Okay, you're worried about finances, you're worried about the job, you're worried about your relationship, and something magnifies and amplifies just as you're stepping into this wonderful space. And so driving here, I was a bit tired. And as I came across the Richmond-San Rafael Bridge and headed into Marin, somewhere I saw a billboard. It was one of those newer ones that shifts, you know, it gives you like four commercials within a minute. And the second one was, I think, a famous actor. I don't know who it was. I think he's a fairly famous actor. With a gun or sort of a some kind of weapon, sort of space science fiction weapon. And it was an ad for some series, and, you know, you can tune in Wednesday, whatever. And I know the action genre, and I know the violence and the guns. And in looking at that, I knew that I could just release into that and be taken by that. I could just go that route of being numbed by all the violence and images of violence and tuning out that the larger culture offers us. I just had the pull. It's like, I'm really tired. I'm going to Spirit Rock. I need a good night's sleep. This is going to be a great retreat, but I've just come off a little distress. Wouldn't it just be easy to go back home and turn on the tube or watch the latest movies and just fall asleep? And those feelings, sensation, that energy arose, and very instantly I made a choice. No. I choose to stay awake. I choose to feel the tired parts of my body, the achy parts, the agitated emotions. And it is not always fun. Yet I choose to resist and transform the matrix. And that takes energy to be aware of the seduction all around us all the time and to meet it and to choose and to have the inner tools and the collective community to sustain the stance and the forward momentum that says, no, I will not fall asleep. And when I do fall asleep, I will reawaken. No, I will not turn from my suffering or the suffering of others or the suffering of the planet. And we will find a path through. And so that's part of the invitation of our practice together. Traditionally, on a lot of retreats at Spirit Rock, the first evening you hear one voice. And while you will hear my voice before Joanna and Donald offer some other things, this isn't a traditional Dharma talk. It's more my voice speaking for all three of us, framing, giving context, opening a portal to what we'll be doing together in our time. And in that respect, I would say right off that we're here to ask you in part to drop your expectations. Many of you are used to coming to Spirit Rock for more traditional Vipassana retreats. For some of you, this may be a first retreat of this sort. Others may have a background in Tibetan Buddhism. Others may have backgrounds in other forms of meditation, other forms of transformational practice. We will be using classical Buddhist practices, we'll also be using engaged Buddhist practices, where we very deliberately bring the suffering of the world to our cushions and very deliberately cultivate the meditative mind to take to the suffering of the world. We'll also be blending silent practice with interactive exercises. Again, we'll be drawing on Buddhist sources, but also non-Buddhist sources. Because the truth, again, is much, much larger than what our minds might delimit as Buddhism. And so, in part, what I'm saying is that we will be inviting you into trying with us, practicing with us, using a range of skillful means, upayas, a range of skillful means. And yet we will continue to be grounded in the traditions of the Buddha, and in particular two tools which are taught very much here at Spirit Rock: mindfulness and loving kindness, qualities of mind that we can access and help meet and neutralize the suffering of the world and transform it. So again, there will be that grounding in the traditional practices, but there'll be so, so much more. And so again, the invitation is to release your expectations, and I'll say more in a few minutes about the overall schedule. But I'll also say that the schedule will be subject to change at any moment. We really will work with what arises. So if something clearly arises that calls for going in a way that's a detour from the schedule, we will make a conscious detour. I want to emphasize that in particular, again, while we'll be choosing many skillful means grounded in traditional Buddhist teachings, in particular mindfulness and loving kindness, we're also going to be looking for your creativity and the best of our collective wisdom and creativity around how do we navigate in the relational and collective settings. Many of the traditional Buddhist practices and tools are great in certain spheres, yet there's not quite as much practice in how they apply to families, communities, organizations, movements. So again, part of what we'll be drawing from will be other traditions, other practices, other tools that give us an edge in those domains. And Joanna, for example, has been pioneering for decades in this arena. And Donald, also for decades. And me, also for decades. We walk in Joanna's footsteps, and we also cut our own path as we move along. And so again, we'll be offering some of that, and again, inviting your creativity and wisdom into the mix, into the pot. The Buddha said, "O monks and wise men, just as a goldsmith would test his gold by burning, cutting, and rubbing it, so must you examine my words and accept them, not merely out of reverence for me. My teaching is not a philosophy. It is the result of direct experience." So we invite you to try things on. We're scientists here, creating some bold experiments. Add a little bit of this, add a little bit of this. See what happens. Take the data, put it on the shelf. And the data may not manifest same moment, same day, but take the data when it does manifest. And our invitation is to try it on, use your direct experience, and be your own lamp, be your own wisdom scientist. Part of the reason that we are going to be as present and as mindful and as exuberant and as big here as we can be in offering and in receiving is because of the urgency of our times. Joanna has been one of the foremost thinkers, visionaries, activists, philosophers, doers in the world, framing the urgency of our time for our planet with her model of the Great Turning. Moving from an industrial growth society that seeks to dominate and extract and destroy, and is capable of doing so with serious consequences, not just in biological time anymore, but nuclear proliferation, and to some degree bioengineering, geological time, with horrendous weapons of mass destruction. And how do we shift from that and the isolation and fragmentation that is part of our global culture to a life-sustaining civilization of deep interconnectedness? So that's going to be the overarching frame for our time together. And Donald and I each have our own takes on that same epochal shift that our planet is going through. The ecological crisis is, for many, at the fore. We may be beyond the point of no return. Global warming, global dimming, species extinction, 70% of biologists put their professional reputations on the line that we're in a mass extinction, depending on which ones you count, fifth or sixth, some say seventh, but still, mass extinction. This time not a cataclysmic event, but the loss of plant species, so many plant species, and animals as well. But when you destroy that part of the web of life, what happens to the rest? We don't know. When we look at the wars, we entered this millennium with the promise of war without end. And part of the nefariousness, insanity, is the way in which we are so often kept from knowing what we in particular in the United States, what actions our government is having around the planet. And we can look at the rates of homicide, the rates of suicide, the rates of domestic violence, the rates of rape. On and on the list goes. So the urgency of the times, coming out of the bloodiest century in recorded history, over 191 million people dead in conflagrations around the globe, the urgency of the times requires creativity, innovation, requires us to blend the traditional practices with contemporary innovations and to be our own wisdom scientists and to share with each other in community the results of our experiments, shifting as best we can towards a life-sustaining civilization if we have time. And even if we don't, we still take right action, not knowing what the consequences might be. And again, Donald has his own particular frame on this, and you'll be hearing a bit about that, where he looks very deeply at the crisis of modernity and the ethos of individualism, the autonomous, fragmented self, the control over so-called nature, the rampant individualism. And he looks at the corrective action with a beautiful blend of spirituality, engaged social action, depth psychology, all moving towards a vision of a spiritual democracy. And again, I have a similar way of viewing and being, drawing on my indigenous traditions and contemporary complexity sciences, where, like with both of my friends and colleagues and many others, I believe that one of the most radical shifts we can make for the healing of ourselves and the planet is a shift in perception. When I look at this apple, if I breathe in, breathe out, and go to a very deep, still place. Part of me can touch the water, the rain, the ocean, the clouds that made this apple possible. Part of me can touch the soil that made this apple possible. In this apple, I can touch the sun and the warmth of the sun. And in the simple act of touching an apple, I can touch the universe. To walk and breathe and live and see that everything is deeply interconnected. That the apple arises in part because of the sun, the soil, the rain. That our distressed states of mind, heart, and body arise in part because of the causes and conditions in the world, in our organizations, in our communities, the planet itself. The world as self, the world as lover, or as lover as self. Title of one of Joanna's books. And so for me, this deep notion of interconnectedness, coming from my Native American and African indigenous traditions, where we look at many of the contemporary complexity sciences, which have only been around for the last few decades, allowing so many advances in the ecosciences, neurobiology, systems theory, organizational dynamics. And we say, we've been doing that for a few thousand years. That's core to our traditions. There's something we need to say to each other, ancients and moderns. And so part of what I will talk about is honoring the Buddha Dharma ancient wisdom tradition and the ancient indigenous traditions. And again, taking whatever skillful means, using whatever skillful means we can to get us through these urgent times. I looked up the definition of distress in the dictionary. Great pain, anxiety or sorrow, acute physical or mental suffering, affliction, trouble, state of extreme necessity or misfortune. That which causes pain, suffering, trouble, danger, etc. The title is Transforming Distress, or Transforming Distressing States of Mind, Heart, and Body for Ourselves and Our World. Transforming. Part of the transformation process involves knowing that they're there, not denying them, ignoring them, but being present to them and having the collective capacity to move through them, yet transforming, moving through. And we focused on mind, heart, and body, that language. The Buddha had traditional teachings around the skandhas, the aggregates or compounds. The self is like five rivers moving through each other, interconnected. We have the skanda or river of form, matter, sense organs and the like. And in different Buddhist traditions, these are treated differently. So I'll give one set of versions. We have sensation, feeling, hot, cold, neutral, pleasant, unpleasant, and perception or apperception or discrimination, cognition, the ability to discriminate or cognize or recognize my voice. This is Lawrence's voice. And the whole arena of mental formations, volitions, judgments, prejudices, wills, habits, and then consciousness itself. It's just a model. Don't get caught up or tripped up on the model. And yet the beauty of it is that they all intermingle. Bringing my mindfulness to a distressed state of body, I can investigate, I can inquire, and I can see all the other skandhas, and I can see the world, just like I can see the sun and the soil in an apple. Thich Nhat Hanh, in the heart of the Buddhist teachings, transforming suffering into peace, joy, and liberation, said, "Look deeply into the five rivers of yourself and see how each river contains the other four. Look at the river of form. In the beginning, you may think that form is just physical and not mental. But every cell in your body contains all aspects of yourself. Each aggregate contains all the other aggregates. Each feeling contains all perceptions, mental formations, and consciousness. Looking into one feeling, you can discover everything. Look in the light of interbeing, and you will see the all in the one and the one in the all. Don't think that form exists outside of feelings, or that feelings exist outside of form." In the Turning the Wheel Sutra, the Buddha said, "The five aggregates, when grasped at, are suffering." He did not say that the five aggregates are in themselves suffering. There's a helpful image in the Ratnakuta Sutra. A man throws a clod of earth at a dog. The dog looks at the clod and barks at it furiously. The dog does not realize that it is the man and not the clod of earth that is responsible. The sutra goes on to say, "In the same way, an ordinary person caught in dualistic conceptions thinks that the five aggregates are the cause of his suffering. But in fact, the root of his suffering is his lack of understanding about the impermanent, non-self, and interdependent nature of the five aggregates. It is not the five aggregates that make us suffer, but the way we relate to them. When we observe the impermanent, non-self, and interdependent nature of all that is, we will not feel aversion for life. In fact, this knowing will help us see the preciousness of all life. The root of our suffering is not the aggregates, but our grasping." And so part of what we will do here is practice in silent traditional forms to notice and let go of that grasping and to feel the distress and the affliction and to meet it with mindfulness and loving kindness and to do this not just for ourselves but in any skanda, any aggregate, any river, to see the other four and to see the entire world. And to do this also for the world. We'll be doing that by grounding ourselves tomorrow, and you will have seen a schedule outside. Grounding ourselves tomorrow in mostly silence. So allowing the body to settle into our time together, more of a traditional retreat format, some traditional meditation instructions. And then the next 2 days after that, Joanna will be framing the Great Turning and a path to help us make the shift towards a life-sustaining civilization, the spiral. And she'll be leading us the range of wonderful, innovative, interactive exercises, dances, and the like through that spiral to help us go through, starting with gratitude and being able to go forth in the world. On Sunday, Donald will continue, again, his own take on that frame of the Great Turning, but focusing very precisely and specifically on transforming certain difficult states of mind, harsh judgments, difficult emotions, and giving us some precise tools and practices for doing that. I'll later be moving into looking at tools and practices for transforming conflict. Again, some traditional practices all the way through to ritual. And then towards the end of our time, we'll have some open space to see what emerges, to see what we might do with that, but then also look at how do we integrate everything we will have done in order to proceed and go forth. The retreat will formally stop, but the practices will have cultivated, the states of mind, heart, and body will continue. So that's our schedule. I would close with just one last thought. For the last few days, in preparing for this retreat, the image of the emaciated Buddha came to mind very often. And for those of you who know the life of the Buddha, he did a range of practices, and he was practicing some pretty austere ascetic practices and almost killed himself. He became so thin that his ribs were showing and they rattled when he walked, and his friends with whom he had been practicing were distraught at how twig-like he looked. This was the Buddha. Almost died. Compassion for ourselves. We're only part-time Buddhas. We awaken and we fall back to sleep. We awaken again. And so please, if the Buddha could have gotten into such a distressing state, be generous, merciful, and compassionate with ourselves, with yourself, with everything that you bring here. And know that just like his emaciated state was transformed into full awakening, we too can transform our distress.